Welcome to JGL Law For You. JGL Law For You is a podcast by lawyers, but not for lawyers only. On JGL Law For You, we will be discussing a wide array of topics to help you navigate the many legal processes, developments in the law, other current events, and how they may affect you, your family, or your business. Today, we're talking about a law that's been enacted in the state of Maryland, and one that really impacts a lot of people going through divorce. Many laws are passed by the legislature when it comes to family law issues that don't have that much impact, that much influence, and frankly, that much effect on what people do during the course of a divorce case. But today, we've got something completely different. And to help us walk through this new law, what it means to you is my friend and law partner, Chris Castellano. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me, David.
Always a pleasure. So let's dig right in here. We're talking about Maryland's law, HB 1018, which talks about assumption of a mortgage as part of a divorce. So tell us about the law, what it does that's different, how it changes things up, and why it matters to people.
Yeah, what this really does, it's a great opportunity to, as kind of you referenced, open doors to people engaged in the divorce process. You know, an assumption in and of itself is not a new concept, as you and I are both well aware. But what this law does is, like I said, open those doors. Previously, what's happened in a lot of situations is that, you know, people going through the divorce, you're left with pretty much two options on the house, right? On the marital home. You either agree that one person stays in the house and they buy out the interest of the other party and you refinance the house. Right? You get a new loan, fresh terms, etc. Or you just sell the thing, right? And nobody wins. Nobody's keeping the house and you just split the proceeds. You know, lost in the fray of all this is, well, what about the people that had a loan that's got 12 years left or 18 years left on the term? And it's at like a, what were we looking at before, you know, during COVID, like a 3.0%, 2.95%, right? These percentage numbers that people look at with watery eyes nowadays, right? Because now we're looking at 6.5% at the bottom line. So what this new law does is that the legislature decided, you know what, for these divorcing parties, let's open these doors. Let's give them an opportunity to make sure that as they enter this next phase of life, that they're not setting themselves up for economic failure with a bad loan or starting back to square zero on a 30-year loan. And it mandates that these financial institutions that are in the business of offering, you know, these mortgages, it mandates that they offer this type of assumption in these circumstances of an individual in connection with absolute divorce decree.
Just to lay this foundation a little bit more, what I have found, I'm sure same with you, is and you mentioned one issue, which is the interest rates are often, particularly for people who either refinanced or purchased their home 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, the rate is significantly lower than what they might get now if they had to go back out on the marketplace. And you mentioned that. Secondly, of course, is some people may not qualify on their own to get a new mortgage, right? Either because their income is significantly lower than it was combined, or because the interest rate is so much higher that it makes the payment difficult for that person who under the old world would be able to pay. Does that make sense?
That's right. I mean, when we look at loans, it's hard to appreciate the effect of the interest rate. And, you know, a person with a, if they took out, I'm not a mortgage originator, I guess we should tell our listeners, you know, I'm not providing the financial advice, but at a base level, you know, you and I, we run numbers for our clients in these cases. And, you know, you've got a, let's just say a $450,000 loan, right? If you're at a 3.0%, then you're looking at a payment of like, what, $2,500, $2,600, right? You know, a 6.5% loan could be somewhere in the neighborhood of almost double that for the same term. And so you do, I should say, you still need to qualify. But as you rightly point out, you know, the qualification parameters are different, right? Qualifying for a refinance of the loan or a refreshed loan at a lower income with a 6.5% is an entirely different prospect than qualifying for an assumption loan that's at a 3% interest rate that's, you know, a monthly payment of $2,500, $2,600.
Let's just make sure everyone is clear. The difference between refinancing and assuming a loan.
Yeah. So refinance is when you have an existing loan and you are, I like to think of it as refreshing the terms in a situation where you're changing the players. So for instance, you know, it's a couple that's on the loan and we're refinancing to drop the one couple off, right? We're going to, in most cases, we're going to length, the loan length is going to go back up to the 30 years if it's a typical conventional loan, and it's going to be at market rates, generally speaking, right? It's going to be right now, it's at like a 6.5% or so, 6.25, maybe, if you're lucky. An assumption, on the other hand, which again, I should say, was always available, but a lot of people didn't really take advantage of it, right? What it allows people to do is they take their existing loan, both people on the loan, you got the spouses on the loan together. And what it says is that you go to the bank and say, listen, bank, we've got this loan. I'm still making good money. We've got a divorce. And what I would like to do is I would like to take over the loan. I can handle the loan on my own. I'd like to take it over, but do me a favor. Don't change the terms on me. You know, I only have 12 years left. I want to keep the 12 years left. And I want to keep that 3% interest rate. So I'm just dropping the person off.
Does this apply to all types of mortgages? In other words, you know, conventional 30-year loans or 15-year loans or adjustable rates, every type of mortgage? Or is there some carving out of those that it doesn't cover?
So there's certainly some significant carve-outs, right? And from what I could tell, the carve-outs are predicated on the concept that any loan that Maryland is talking about, we want to avoid federal preemption, right? So any loan that's got a federal backing is going to be exempted from this statute. So you're talking the FHA loans, VA loans, USDA loans, etc. That also includes banks that are operating on a national scale, depository banks. What we're really talking about here is loans from, you know, I'll use the specific phrase just to be very technical and specific, but the non-depository banking institutions, right? Banks that are not taking deposits and withdrawals as an ordinary business function, that are offering mortgages for the purposes of originating said mortgages, and they are not dealing with specific federal government-backed loans like the FHA, VA, USDA loans. So like you said, we're talking about the conventional loans. And that does include, in a lot of ways, jumbo loans, which are, quite frankly, not as heavily used right now, at least in the last few years. I'm sure they'll make a comeback at some point once we all start not thinking about them, but yeah.
So if I, you know, if I bank, you know, for example, at Bank of America or SunTrust or whatever it's called now, Truist, and you know, I've got my mortgage with them, they're not obligated because they take savings accounts, checking accounts, that sort of thing. They're not obligated under this law to permit the assumption. Is that right?
That's right. And the reason for it is not to kind of disqualify the bigger loans that a lot of people have. It's really that these bigger lenders are already operating under the purview of a lot of federal regulations. And Maryland can't, they are preempted by those federal regulations, meaning that Maryland can't put itself above those federal laws. I mean, I would love to have that federalism conversation with you if you want on a different day. But as far as this mortgage conversation,
that's a whole conversation in and of itself. Right. Yes.
But as far as this conversation, no. I mean, it was not done, so far as I could tell, it's not done to disadvantage those going with the big banks, but just because it's an operation of inability to deal with banks that have federal entanglements.
But for those of us who may have our mortgage with one of those nationwide banks, let's call them, you're not precluded from going to your lender, that Bank of America, that SunTrust, that Truist, whoever they may be, and saying, listen, I'd like to try to do this, right? You can still go to that bank and see if they'll do it for you.
That's right. No, as we opened up here, an assumption is not a new concept, right? I haven't talked to you specifically about this in the past, but I'm sure you've done a lot of assumptions. I've done assumptions in my cases, and it's always been a very useful tactic, right, to deal with the house and the loan in an advantageous way. So no, they can certainly go to the big boys out there that are doing mortgages to get an assumption. I like to view this as a mandated disclosure requirement and offering as opposed to too much more than that, right? This is forcing these specific banks that Maryland can regulate that says, no, you have to offer divorcing couples this option.
Let me ask you a question about the qualification piece of this. You know, what does it mean when the statute says you have to qualify?
You know, when you go through the process of originating a new mortgage, right? If we all remember, you know, you're giving however many years or months worth of pay statements and the bank statements, the utility statements, and, you know, a vial of your blood and everything else under the sun. The qualification purpose for the assumption, it's going to be based on the institution, you know, so institution specific, but it is generally speaking, it's a lighter process, but it's by no means less important. You know, because the bank still needs to make sure that they need to do their due diligence to make sure that an individual can still qualify, meaning that they could still pay that loan and pay it now on their own as opposed to with a second individual attached to the loan.
Does this qualification provision, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, and I certainly don't, does it allow for a bank that maybe, you know, again, we talk about banks because they're buildings, because we deal with them. But these are, bank management is a group of people who are together and managing the business of that bank to make money. So is there any room for maneuverability for a bank that says, you know what, we don't want to do this. We have to at least let people apply, but they still have to qualify. So is there any room for a bank, A, to sort of not qualify people to avoid these loans, A, and B, is there motivation? Could there be motivation for those institutions not to permit these assumptions? In other words, say, okay, you've applied, but you're not qualified.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to know your thoughts and your experience on this. You know, assumptions, well, let me back up. Refinances have always been a straightforward process, right? To dump the other person off the loan, you know, you refinance, you got a refresh loan. Assumptions were never a straightforward process. And I have every confidence to believe that that's going to remain so. So to answer your question, does the statute change that? I've seen nothing in the statute that changes the process insofar as will it be easier or harder. To answer the second part of your question, is there an incentive to the banks? I think that that incentive remains. That incentive remains to prevent assumptions. I mean, from a business standpoint, you have every incentive under the sun to deny an assumption to force people into a brand new refresh loan for an extra 15 or so years or whatever the term limits may be with a much higher interest rate. I mean, they stand to gain exorbitantly more money doing that.
They certainly do. The flip side of that, of course, is that the borrower or the proposed assumer, if that's the right word, the person who wants to assume the loan, can't afford the new rate. And therefore, they're going to put the house on the market and the bank loses all of the interest because the new buyer uses a different lender. It's an interesting question.
It is. I mean, and again, you and I can have a more interesting conversation on that.
This is an interesting conversation.
Well, no, insofar as, you know, or how many mortgages are now being purchased by other institutions as opposed to individuals, right? And I don't want to step into the fray of politics in that regard, but I think there is a larger discussion to be had on, you know, whether these banks are fostering mom and pop loans, you know, for individual Americans to have properties as opposed to larger hedge funds. Because one of the largest growing sect of homeowners in America is large hedge funds.
Let's shift now to those folks out there who are listening and really want to get their hands around what's the real impact on me? What's this law's real impact on me and what I might be able to do during the divorce process? How can it help me, help my family, help my kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the house represents, it's a microcosm of the family, right? It's where the first birthdays, 10th birthdays, it's where, you know, retirement parties for family members, you know, funeral wakes, everything happens in the household. It takes on a personality in and of itself, you know, right? You know, there's no mistake, you know, we're entering into the Halloween season. There's no mistaking the reality that a genre of, you know, horror movies is haunted houses, right? Because they are themselves a character. We view houses as a personality in and of itself. And I say this not as a frolic and detour, but to build up the concept that the house is an incredibly important feature of one's life, because the house represents stability. It represents where routines are established. It's where memories are created and fostered. And so for a lot of people, I mean, countless people out there, the vast majority, their desire in a divorce case, and I'm sure they've communicated this to you, is I want to keep the house. I want the kids to stay in the house. I want that stability for the house. And for the longest time, up until this law, really, for the most part, how to deal with the house has been kind of a significant speed bump, right? Because if that interest rate's too high, or the terms are such that, you know, the parent that's acquiring the house, for instance, you know, just can't take it on, then with refinance, then you're out of luck. This assumption opens that up. It opens up the ability. So I give credit to the legislature to really force this, because, you know, we can have a lot of discussions about whether they're doing things for the betterment or not. I don't think there's any doubt in this situation. This law is meant to help families and to help families dealing with a terrible time in their life, which is their divorce, and give them that kind of life preserver. To say, no, you know what? We're going to offer this to you, and we're going to make the banks offer it to you. Now, whether we're going to force the banks to give it is a different story entirely. I don't think they can do that. But at least the conversation is now started. And once you have enough people asking for assumptions, I got to tell you, I don't know how many banks are going to get away with just full sale denials.
I don't see any downside at all to this legislation. I mean, we both look at new laws that are either come through committee and to the House, and some that pass, some that don't. And most of them, one could argue both sides, right? That there's a reason not to enact this particular piece of legislation. But in this case, I don't see that it hurts anybody. All it can do is be, as you mentioned, a neutral, that it doesn't necessarily help. But if nothing else, it's going to be a positive impact on families going through divorce. I think that's the main takeaway. So let me ask you this question. So, okay, so I'm listening to this and I'm saying to myself, okay, this is great. I'll just call my bank or I'll take care of it. How does a lawyer, getting a lawyer, and you know how I feel about this, and there's never a divorce case that's come down the path that somebody shouldn't at least talk to a lawyer for. People are hesitant to spend money, and I certainly get that. I would be too. But in this case, what's the benefit of having someone like you help someone navigate this specific issue, both in terms of negotiating the agreement and looking at the options when it comes to a potential resolution of financial issues in your divorce case?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm with you, right? Is that anytime that there's a development in the law or something that could be fiscally advantageous, you know, talking to a lawyer first is always of course, I'm biased, right? But I do believe that that's your first step. An assumption in and of itself, this is part and parcel to the divorce process. So more likely than not, you're going to be talking to someone like yourself or myself to talk about not even just the house, but child custody and child support and all the other issues that go along with divorce. But talking to an attorney that is aware of assumptions, that's aware of this new statute, that's aware of how to deal with banks and these mortgage institutions on assumptions, gives the party, our clients, an additional tool in their tool chest, right, to deal with this. Because if you talk to a lawyer or even go at it your own that doesn't have that background knowledge, then, you know, you're really cutting your nose off to spite your face, because what this law is, as you said, it's a neutral, it's only beneficial to the clients. It's an opportunity for these clients to come out of their divorce fiscally minded and appropriate. And I think that, quite frankly, talking to a lawyer who, A, doesn't understand this, or not talking to a lawyer at all, that's the quickest way to throw out the cost savings that an assumption provides. So again, you know, cut your nose off to spite your face at your own risk, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and this isn't just a decision for you individually, for those of us who are listening out there, but it's a decision that affects your family, affects your children, affects all the things that, Chris, that you mentioned earlier, that people are interested in protecting. And so we live in a soundbite world, right? So give me, you know, two or three soundbite takeaways that people can take from this discussion that we've had today?
Yeah, Maryland legislature has done a service to Maryland clients, Maryland couples. And what they've done is they've essentially mandated that mortgage lenders offer the opportunity to assume a very advantageous loan. It's an opportunity for you to stay in your house, maintain stability for your kids, and do what's right for your family, both emotionally and fiscally, and talking with the right attorney like us here at Joseph Greenwald and Lake can help really set yourself up in a good way.
All right, Chris, thank you very, very much. I think this has been incredibly helpful and informative to folks out there. And if people want to ask you more questions about this law or talk to you about their potential separation and divorce, what's the best way for them to get hold of you?
Yeah, give me a call at 240-399-7881. That's my direct line. I'd be happy to talk to you at any time to talk not only about this new law, this assumption law, but also, you know, your separation agreement or case generally. I'd be happy to have a conversation.
Folks, this is such an important development in the law. If you live here in Maryland, have property here in Maryland, do yourselves a favor. Give Chris Castellano a call. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing from you and seeing you next time on JGL Law for You.